Kyle.
And I'm Trevor, and welcome to Catching Up on Cinema. If you aren't familiar with the program, Catching Up on Cinema is a film analysis podcast wherein we introduce each other to films, expand our cinematic horizons, and, in essence, catch up on our cinema. So, it is the month of December 2023, and while we don't have a theme this month, you may have noticed that Kyle was back on the mic just now. How you been, bud?
No, not too bad, not too bad. I crawled out of my tauntaun this morning here on the ice cube planet of Hoth. Made it back to base just in time to record this one.
Oh yeah, very, very happy to have you back, Kyle. And dear listeners, I haven't actually spoken face-to-face with Kyle in a long time, being as you've relocated, but we haven't been on the webcam even in a long time, so this is a treat for both you and I today. But the way we ended up selecting today's episode was kind of a funny process, because a while back, Kyle had texted me, and he was like, you know, I've been away for a while, and, you know, I feel like I owes you, you know, like Paulie to Rocky, I owes you. So how about you text me, like, about 8 movies or so, movies that you, specifically you, might be interested in reviewing and talking about, and then I will whittle them down and pick the ones that I can tolerate to talk about.
Well, it's my gift to you, because choosing, as you get, for some people, as you get into adulthood, is like, I don't want to choose. And I don't mind. I'm usually pretty decisive. So I'm like, oh, that'll be my gift to you. You narrow it down, and then I'll just make the choices for you, so you don't have to worry about it. You don't have to take the blame.
Yeah, that's one angle of it, but I think mostly it's Kyle vetting my choices and making sure he doesn't get stuck with 4 fucking stinkers in the month of December.
Well, it wasn't that at all. I was just trying to release the stress off of you so you didn't have to, like, have to choose everything. Also, I've saved you the trouble of watching 8-Bit Christmas. It'll just pass right through you.
Oh, really?
It's whatever.
Okay. I actually was considering checking that out at one point, just because it does check a lot of, you know, nostalgia boxes and whatnot, but that kind of sucks. I hadn't heard any reviews of it, but you heard it here, folks. Apparently Kyle, not a fan.
Yeah, it was fine. Like, it's just, eh.
Where is that hosted, by the way?
Was it Disney Plus or HBO Max? I can't remember.
Either way, I don't have those at the moment, so I guess I couldn't watch it if I wanted to.
One of the reasons why I picked this one was because for some reason I thought it was available on Max or something like that. I thought it was like a free streamer for me, and then I went to go rewatch it. And I'm like, oh shit, I got to rent this one.
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie, it's been a while since I've had to do that. Not a good feeling. It doesn't feel good paying for something that I then don't get to own. Yeah. as a collector of physical media. Anyway, to dispel the mystery as to what movie we're going to be talking about today, Kyle selected, of the 8 or so that I tossed his way, he selected for us to talk today about Talk to Me from the year 2022. And this comes to us from Australian directors, brothers, I believe, Danny and Michael Filippo, who are also known by the alias of Raka Raka. Had you heard about that, Kyle? Have you heard about this?
No, I have not.
So it's nothing that I'm actually familiar with. It's just stuff that I've seen in reviews posted about the film. But apparently Raka Raka, Waka Waka, is a YouTube channel that has like billions of views or something, and they specialize in like comedic horror shorts for YouTube, and that's these filmmakers' background. As far as I know, this is their feature film debut. But they picked up most of their skills apparently publishing stuff on YouTube. That's the era we live in.
Yeah.
But yeah, this movie, just to give a little bit of background, this isn't going to be a research-heavy review, nor is this going to be an organized review, mind you. This is just me and Kyle talking about a thing that we watched very recently. But this is an A24 production. That's a very important note to bring into this discussion. I say that because A24 carries... Would you say they carry like a certain level of prestige or like reputation, Kyle?
They did, yes. They've been a little shaky, in my opinion, as of late. But I feel like, you know, they're very capable of, you know, righting their wrongs.
What would you say is, like, the cutoff point? Like, do you have an example or two of, like, movies where your eyebrow went up? Like, you did a people's eyebrow watching the movie, and you're like, I don't know if this is working for me.
Yeah, it was a movie that came out in 2022 called Talk to Me. So that's one of them, I'll tell you that much.
Okay, well, I do know that they are in the middle of, for lack of a better term, a movement of aggressive expansion. Mm-hmm. They are holding tryouts, as it were. As far as I understand, they're doing quite well, critically and financially, such that I think they had a posting not too long ago basically asking people, like, what genres do you want us to branch out into? And on top of that, I think they announced that they're going to try to produce an action film of, I don't know what budget range, but they are aggressively expanding. And sometimes when, you know, the company culture and philosophy changes in that way, sometimes maybe things, like, distort and get muddled and aren't as clear as they used to be. But yeah, just to spoil things ahead of time, I guess, Kyle wasn't a big fan of this one. But would you like to give a plot rundown to this one, Kyle, so we can get right into it?
Yeah. Some fucking kids in Australia find this hand that does something to them when you touch it and say, talk to me? Did they say talk to me? Yeah they say talk to me, the titular talk to me. What that does, not real clear. It possesses them for a little bit, and I guess if they're able to find a decent host and you do it enough times, it latches onto you, and then you do weird things, and then something else happens. Is that pretty clear? Because that's about what I got out of it.
Not at all clear, but largely accurate. Actually, I did have some objections about that aspect of the film as well. I will say up front that I did not hate this film. I thought it had a lot of strengths, in particular in terms of, like, sound design, some of the editing, some of the cinematography. It has a really great look to it, although that's kind of starting to get cheaper in my eyes, because I'm starting to notice that most movies these days look pretty damn good as compared to how cheap films back in the day used to look. Like, you could look at a cheap-ass film from the 70s or the 80s, and it looked ratty. Like, it looked bad.
Yeah.
These days, it's like even low-budget movies tend to look pretty good. Mm-hmm. So, like, it's harder for me to shower praise on something like that because of that. But, yeah, really, kind of what you mentioned just then is my biggest objection to the movie, is there's a certain point, about the halfway point, where my engagement level started to falter, because there started to be the logic of the supernatural business in the movie started to have holes in it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe not holes, but it was, the storytelling was muddled to the point where I was grappling with the rules. And when it comes to horror movies and supernatural stuff, rules are really important. Rules are what allow you to follow the story comfortably and like fall into the rhythm of the thing and start to expect, like, surprises around each corner and stuff. But did you have anything that you liked about this one, or was it just a total stinker for you?
Well, I was really excited about this when the trailer had me. So I was like, oh, this, I was waiting for this. Kind of like Antlers. Like, I got to stop doing that. I have to stop, like, putting stock into trailers thinking that I'm going to be impressed by a film. Because as of late, over the past couple years, I find myself wanting to turn off films more than finishing them. And this one is no exception. This was one I was just like, I can't even. I think I saw this one in the theater and nearly walked out of it, because I'm just like, because halfway through, I'm just like, what is even happening anymore? Do you know what you're doing? Because it doesn't seem like it. And maybe that's just where I am in my life. It's hard for me to engage with films. I'm a little bit busier than I have been. So it's just more challenging. So I'm like, I really need you to just grab me by the balls and take me for a ride. Cause they completely let go of my balls halfway through. I'm like, now I'm just checked out. I think this movie starts off strong. I think it does have me engaged, especially through the party scene. But kind of after that, it just kind of piddles out. I'm more annoyed by the characters. I'm trying to think of something that I actually like. Kind of liked. I think that initial scene with Mia at the party, doing the actual thing. That was a pretty good scene. That was pretty good. And I think it is a very strong opening scene as well. Like it gets you. I'm like, okay, I'm here. Let's get after it. And then we just kind of lose, like, is this about grief? Is this about peer pressure? Is this about something that's just going over my head that I'm not getting? I don't know. I think the suspenseful scenes in the beginning kind of worked for me. But this movie also does the thing that kind of drives me nuts, is person's going crazy and they don't know it. Everybody else around them is like, oh, you're off. And I think it's a crutch.
Yeah, actually, wow, Kyle, you just really summed up a lot of my feelings about the movie. Sorry. Like, really succinctly.
And we're done.
review over. Everything that guy just said is what I thought. So cool. I largely agree with almost everything you just said. The opening, you did praise that. I agree wholeheartedly. That was fantastic, a terrific opening sequence. Yeah. On top of that, it's kind of cute because, remember, these directors' feature film debut. Why not do a master shot? It feels very Scorsese or Paul Thomas Anderson-y. Mm-hmm. The tracking shot following the fella walking through the party scene from behind. It's ambitious on a technical level. There's a lot of extras that need to be coordinated and stuff. It has really lovely production design in the form of the sound and the lighting. There's even a little bit of an Easter egg I noticed where it's catching up on cinema, full spoilers, so
yeah,
proceed at your own risk. The scene concludes with the brother being pulled out of the bedroom, stabbing the person who knocked down the door and tried to retrieve him, and then stabbing himself in the fucking face. Snap to black. Great opening. I like that quite a lot. Has a cool energy and a nice stinger of things to come. But the Easter egg I noticed was as the fellow's walking through the party and passes his mother, she's like chopping vegetables or something in the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
Who the
Which
fuck
I thought
does
was,
that?
Yeah, nobody does that.
Yeah, who the fuck does that in a chaotic party like that with like 50 fucking people there?
No.
And what the fuck kind of parent would tolerate that? anyway, she's chopping vegetables and there's a very pronounced like slicing sound effect as she's doing it. So I guess it's meant to like, you know, on a technical level, this is very skillful filmmaking. It's basically meant to plant the seed in your head that there is a knife in the room. Mm-hmm. And then it comes into play very shortly thereafter. But that opening is a banger. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, it kind of feels like to me that, not to make it too big of a slight against the filmmakers, but those scenes in the film, I think, are its strongest ones. Is the party scenes,
mm-hmm.
is the scenes that are cut with a certain degree of energy and have a certain flair in the cinematography and the editing that unfortunately does make me think of a short format or say YouTube or something. But when it comes to integrating all of those individual scenes into like a cohesive feature length narrative film, to me, it felt like it started to fall apart a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Especially at that second half point that Kyle had mentioned, where there's a party scene, a really awesomely brutal sequence, and then there's a bit of a lull in the action, which is fine and expected at the middle of a movie like this. But then the logic of the story just really starts to get muddy. And as Kyle had said, why are you doing this? This doesn't make sense. That's kind of how I felt, where I'm like, I'm watching this, but I'm not following. Like, I don't quite get why characters are doing what they're doing and making the decisions they're making, and the movie really doesn't seem terribly interested in helping me out with that, such that it's a little bit difficult to engage with. Like, there's some neat and grisly visuals and stuff, there's some neat energy to it, there's some cool violence and whatnot, but it just doesn't have the same level of clarity and cohesion that the first half of the movie had, and that was very disappointing to me.
It seems like they had ideas for scenes and then tried to maybe build a story around that, and then they just never really finish the story. It's like, well, we'll just kind of pitter it out a little bit. A franchise that kind of, I think, is that, is just like, we have ideas for scenes and we're going to kind of construct a narrative around it, is Evil Dead. Because really, there's no point to those movies. Like, there's not a story. And even the demon or whatever the evil it is doesn't really have any direction. It's just chaos. But it works because it's, you like, at least some of them are horror comedies. Others are just the most fake blood ever used in a movie, which is pretty cool. But here, it's like you have people actually committing to their characters. Like, Miranda Otto is my favorite part of this whole movie, the mom.
Oh, she is Mama Bear. That scene when the boy comes to the house is hilarious.
What does she say? She's like, "On God, I will punch you in the face." It's just so
that
good.
That was the line that where I lost it. This is her 15-year-old son, by the way.
It's pretty funny. And then the friend's like, "If there's a party, I'm drinking." It's good. Like the characters are pretty well written. I think the performances of the characters are pretty good.
Performances I don't have a whole lot of criticism for. Writing in terms of structure, not that's a different story. The lead actress in particular, I know she got a lot of attention for this role, Sophia Wilde.
Mm-hmm.
I thought she did quite well, especially in terms of like the possession sequences and whatnot. And in terms of like the material that she has to work with, this is very much like a dream role for a lot of actors, where she gets to play the emotional range of being goofy and fun to being haunted and grim and crying on camera, being a fucking crazy monster and stuff. I think it's worth pointing out that she doesn't have a long list of credits on IMDb and such, but she did play Ophelia in a stage production at one point, and it's like, ah, there's the crazy. She is familiar with crazy. But yeah, I thought she did quite well. But Kyle's absolutely right. Miranda Otto from Lord of the Rings, correct?
Correct. She's been in other things, I'm sure.
I mean, not things that I've seen, Kyle. But she is... her characterization gets weird towards the end, where like she gets weirdly friendly for no real reason. I liked her when she was brash and harsh. She was really good at being a stern mom.
Yeah, when she dresses her down, it's like it got real. Like that was painful, because it's kind of like her. It's kind of like Mia's other family. She's much closer with them than she is with her own father, and that's a weird dynamic as well. So Mia's mother, I guess, had passed away 2 years ago, and I can't remember how she died. Do you recall?
So that's actually a big plot point, but just to lay it all out, at the outset of the film, we do know that she passed away. We do know that Mia has not gotten past it. She still thinks about it all the time. I mean, it was only a couple of years ago. She accidentally consumed too many sleeping pills and locked herself in her bedroom, so her husband couldn't get to her to save her. But then, towards the end of the movie, the father reads to Mia a suicide note from her mother, indicating that it was intentional, and that she basically says, "I'm sorry." And Mia, up until that point, had been not sure. She had assumed that it was an accident, but no, apparently it was intentional, and it was tragic.
Yeah, I forgot about the mom thing. But yeah, that I think that might be my biggest issue with this, because it just doesn't make any sense. Like, grief is clearly, I mean, because Ari Aster deals with grief in his films. Grief in a film like this is not something an A24 production is new to. And it's here, but it manifests in a very strange way, and that doesn't really make sense.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. Like, I've been thinking about that as we've been talking, and that does, weird as it is to say, I kind of wish this movie was dumber.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because it almost feels at this point like it's expected that it carries the A24 banner, therefore it needs to have depth and meaning and be about something.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate to say it, but while, of course, suicide and grief and stuff are really heavy subject matter that are definitely relatable to a chunk of the population, if I'm being honest, I think it was not the best material in the movie. I don't think it was particularly... I don't think it was handled particularly well.
No.
I was much more engaged with the movie when it was just dumb kids partying and being dumb kids. All I wanted this movie to be was its first half. Just dumb kids, fuck with shit they shouldn't, pay the price.
Yeah.
Doesn't need to be deeper than that.
Yeah, I mean, because when the younger brother... So, yeah, Mia is, you know, she's friends with this girl. I don't know what the girl's name is, but she has a younger brother.
Jade.
Yeah. She's really chummy with this younger brother. She's kind of treating him like it's her own younger brother. And he ends up doing this thing. And the sister's against it. She doesn't want him to do it, but they let him do it. And it goes bad. It goes really bad. Like, kind of like getting your younger brother stoned for the first time, or getting him drunk and he gets alcohol poisoning. Like, it's a real fucked around and found out kind of thing. And they treat it just the same. It's like, we need to get our story straight. Like, we have to cover our asses. It gets real. And from there, it's just like, okay, now where's the movie going to go? Not really anywhere from here. It's really disappointing.
Yeah, it is very strange that midpoint sequence, which we got to talk about, because it is a showstopper. Like, it's really well executed. But after that, maybe it was too impactful or something. Like, because the movie just kind of feels like it doesn't know where to go. Because it up until that point, it's a bunch of kids. It's a group of kids, like a bunch of teenagers of different age ranges and stuff, and they're all doing this group activity of summoning the spirits, allowing them to possess them through this embalmed ceramic hand, and they treat it like a party trick. Like, basically it's like tripping balls at a party and everybody's filming on their cell phones and stuff. But after that incident in the middle of the movie, the narrative shifts to be like entirely focused on Mia's business. And as I said, it feels Mia's business feels underdeveloped and foggy at best. And on top of that, I hate to say it, but I do agree with Kyle, like the questioning reality aspect of the characterization of Mia just feels like a little bit of a cop-out, because it's handled kind of clumsily and it's confusing for the viewer in not a provocative way, in a frustrating way, where it's like, I don't quite get what is going on here. And while the visuals and the energy is pretty good from time to time, you got to give me some breadcrumbs to follow for me to get what you're aiming towards. And it really, really doesn't achieve that in the second half. But you want to talk about that party sequence, Kyle? Because I thought it was pretty fucking cool.
The one with the kid?
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead. Get us going on that.
Okay, I'll set it up, but you can spike it. So basically, they have a party. As I explained the setup with the talk to me thing, where it's basically a party trick. All these kids get together. They shake hands with the ceramic embalmed hand. They say the phrase, talk to me, and they see a spirit. They see a dead person. Usually a grotesquely deformed dead person. And by the way, the makeup effects in this movie are quite good. That is something that I can just 100% praise. A lot of the makeup and the gore in this movie is really well done. In particular, the bloated drowned woman is pretty effective. I do notice that I don't know the age range of these filmmakers, but they do seem to be terrified of old people. Yeah. I mean, maybe that's a universal fear for most people, but I do notice that the general age range of a lot of these ghosts tends to be pretty old and kind of haggard looking. But yeah, there is an obvious like allegory for drug use in the form of them abusing this spirit medium that they use to like become possessed for. There's a time limit they impose where it's like, if you allow the spirit into your body for over 90 seconds, they tend to want to hang around and we can't control it. And of course they fuck that up almost immediately. But they do this in multiple sessions. And again, they're like filming this and posting it on social media. Again, this is very, very obvious like allegory for, you know, the kids these days and social media culture and stuff. And drug use and drug abuse. But the midpoint of the movie, they stage one of these parties at Jade and Riley's house. Mm-hmm. Mia's like surrogate family of sorts. They stage it at their house, in Miranda Otto's house, so you know she's not happy about it. And we get like a really highly energetic montage of all of them, except for the two younger kids in the room, Riley being one of them, using this hand multiple times apparently in one evening. And then the energy shifts when Riley wants to use the hand. And do you remember how all this went down, Kyle?
I don't remember how, like, what happens to Riley. I do remember what happens to Riley.
Please share.
So Riley ends up doing it, and something grabs a hold of him tightly and smashes his face into the table. Just something bad. Like, he's just smashing his face. And then he tries to pull his own goddamn eyeball out, which was pretty disgusting. Because they do a pretty good job of him, like, he's trying to pull it out, and Mia, you know, stops him. But then, they've completely lost control of the situation. He, like, the chair flies over to the wall, he's smashing his head in some more. Somehow it stops, but, yeah, it's pretty disgusting. And this kid, it looks bad.
Again, all credit to the makeup effects technicians, these people looked into some medical journals and whatnot, because it's not often you see someone fucked up for real in a movie, where there's a certain kind of swelling that happens in people's faces when they undergo harsh trauma that you don't often see reflected in cinema, and here they do it pretty earnestly.
I can't not think of Hereditary when, like, because Mia, just at this point, like, when this happens, she's just, like, in shock. And if you remember Hereditary, he just walks in and just lays down and goes to sleep. Or just lays in his bed. I don't think he slept. But yeah, it's similar here. It's just like, she's just completely shell-shocked. Like, what the fuck just happened?
Yeah, I will point out that apparently Riley was possessed. Mia believes it was her mother that was possessing him at the time. Mm. Like, the spirit inhabiting him speaks to her as if it's her mother. And this is one of those vague things in the movie that isn't actually explicitly explained, but it is teased that the spirits have the ability to, like, mimic people. So it does seem to be implied that there's some malevolent force or something that isn't necessarily who it claims to be, and it's manipulating Mia and whoever it talks with or inhabits. But yeah, watching this kid bash his own head against furniture is brutal. And yeah, the bit where he's yanking his own eyeball out is like, damn!
What was the movie with Rebecca from the town where she's at, like, a lake house? The Night House? Is that what it is or something?
I remember the trailer. Night House.
Yeah, did you watch that? Did we do that for the podcast?
We did that for the podcast.
That's what I thought, yeah. Well, she's about to, she thinks it's her husband. She's about to get banged by this invisible entity. And she's like, Derek, is that you? And it's like, nope. It's like, oh, shit. Like, you can't trust these things, man. Like, they're not being honest. They don't have to be honest. No one's going to hold them responsible for lying. Like, jeez. Yeah.
Fucking catfished by a spirit.
Getting scammed by a kindergartner. Tis the season.
The spirit is an African prince. Little did you know. Shit. But yeah, that party sequence where Riley tries to bash his own brains out. I ain't gonna hurt you. I'm just gonna bash your brains in. Yeah. is a showstopper. I liked it quite a lot. It shot well. The makeup effects are terrific. It does have a really intense vibe to it. And honestly, the montage preceding it has a fun energy to the pacing of the edit and stuff. And again, I keep coming back to this. It's like, maybe these fellas should have kept doing shorts or something, because the second half of the movie just it kind of falls off a little bit of a cliff, if I'm being honest.
Or just have somebody write a script like actually have somebody write a story that makes sense. Because I mean, it seems like they're capable of, you know, creating something on film, just not with the narrative.
Or, I mean, maybe there was just too many plates spinning from a story standpoint. Like, maybe pare it down so it's about less things. Because Kyle rattled off like three or four different buzzwords you could use to describe what the movie is, quote, about. It's like, maybe cut it down to two.
Yeah.
And make a more focused story that it's simpler, for sure, but just more effective. Or because on top of that, you have things like, I don't know if you remember this, but towards the beginning of the movie, the kangaroo in the middle of the road. Do you remember that scene?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I think it was an animatronic that they used for it, and it looks pretty authentic, honestly. Mm-hmm. But it's the sequence where there's a kangaroo that's been hit by a car. It's in the middle of the road, and Riley and Mia roll up on it in her car, and they're not sure what to do. And Riley thinks, like, maybe we should put it out of its misery. It does seem to be in a lot of pain, and it obviously can't get up under its own power. And she considers it, but she doesn't. She moves on. And that scene takes up not very much screen time, but it's so deliberately placed in the film that it feels like the whole movie should be built around that. And I never quite got that.
I think the closest thing that I could squeegee out of this thing, like really like try to understand, I think the
ShamWow out of this movie.
ShamWow out of this movie. I think the biggest theme is kind of hurting your surrogate family. And I think maybe there was something there. Like, perhaps she thinks her mom is, like, this is her mom trying to communicate with her, and she keeps basically forcing people to, or like keeps trying to get people to do the talk to me thing, like do the thing with the hand, and it starts harming more and more people, or it gets worse and worse, but she doesn't care because she's seeking her own gratification. She's trying to seek something that she's missing from this. And I feel like that's kind of what they were going for a little bit, because she's just kind of selfish, and she gets tunnel vision, and she doesn't really care that this might be harming herself or other people. Yeah, and then she has the reckoning with the little brother, where it's like, oh shit, I might have really made a mistake. And she doesn't learn from that, and she, you know, she just kind of keeps going with it. But the repercussions aren't as bad as what they are here. It's really bad. Now, you could have pushed this to later in the film, maybe, and like had it really build to that. It's like, oh, now I've really messed up. Because she's all like, you're right, it doesn't make sense that Miranda Otto would be kind of nice to her again. Because, dude, if this happened to your kid, I think you're pretty much done. You're done with this person forever. Like, there's no forgiving.
Yeah, that's kind of how I felt about it. I have a couple of thoughts, back to back here, so bear with me, Kyle. Mm-hmm. So, one, I think actually I think you might be spot on with a lot of the thematic content in the movie. Because, yes, Mia does seem to be, basically, she's making her self-destruction everyone else's.
Yeah.
You're right in pointing out that in most instances where they're making poor choices or abusing the talk to me hand, it's her actually who allowed Riley to do it. He asked her, his biological sister said no, but it was Mia who enabled it. So she basically is bringing everyone down with her.
Yeah.
And I guess maybe you could reason that there's some sort of theme going on with the kangaroo, wherein it's like it's symbolic of her being incapable of letting go, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I have a third thought that just popped up. But second thought, have you seen Smile, the horror film?
I have not.
Okay. It's not bad.
Okay.
I wouldn't say it's great, but it's not bad. I watched it not too long ago, a few months back. Anyway, we can talk about that later. But some of the stuff you're talking about made me think of that movie. Third thought, though, I lost, so I apologize. Third thought had to do with such a weird thing. So apologies if this is totally out of left field. There's a scene where she's laying in bed with the guy that she likes,
yeah.
who her her not quite sister actually is in a relationship with, which really complicates things. Especially when she starts sucking his toes. she's in bed and she's poring over photos of her deceased mother in her phone. And it had this thought popped into my head that was, I don't know, kind of unpleasant, not great, where it's like the way that we process losing people or the way that we grieve and stuff probably has radically changed since cell phone and like portable like camera technology that allows you to carry those memories like digitally on your person 24/7. Mm-hmm. Because back in the day, you'd lose people, and I'm talking a long time ago before you and I were born, you'd lose people, and if you had mementos, you probably only had a few of them, and they were physical totems that they were one of a kind or something. They were on your mantle, you know, in your basement, in a box somewhere. They weren't in your face all the time. But these days, it's like, you know, somebody has a bad breakup or something, and they can flip through photos of their ex anytime they have the impulse, and it has to be self-destructive in some fashion. Like, that has to be doing some sort of psychological harm to not let go in the same way. I don't know if that's actually true, but that thought just popped into my head where it's like, yeah, that might be dangerous if you abuse it.
Yeah, that's, I've never considered that, but yeah, you're right. Especially now, like, I've got two dogs and I've got tons of pictures of them on my phone, and they are going to die one day. And I've thought about, like, damn, like, I'm going to have all these pictures of my dog. I'm like, I'm not going to delete them, but they're always just going to be right there in my photo album. Yeah, I never would have considered that. But yeah, she's just, you know, mother passed away recently, and she's got videos and photos of her mom that she can just access anytime. So yeah,
Oh, wow. Wow, yeah, I think I'm onto something, Kyle, because the hand does exactly the same thing, I guess, if you get lucky or you really, really want it to, or maybe it pretends to give you what you're inadvertently wishing for, just like poring over photos of deceased relatives in your phone.
Yeah, interesting.
Damn it. I didn't mean to compliment the movie just now.
I mean,
we found something. Yeah, I found them.
Yes, but the thing is, Trevor, that's an idea, and that's definitely something that I could see.
That's an idea.
It's an idea, but it's not something that they really develop or explore, or at least clearly tell us that's what they were kind of getting at.
Yeah, see, what Kyle is correctly emphasizing just now is that I have this problem every once in a while, often. Kyle knows this from talking to me, where sometimes I don't see the movie for what it is. Sometimes I see the movie for what it could be, and he's right. What we just talked about could have been the movie, but in actuality, it's just 10 seconds of a girl scrolling through her phone. The movie didn't put any particular emphasis on that particular syllable.
Yeah, no, it really didn't. Yeah, I mean, I don't know where to go from here. I mean, I don't think, does she have to, like, do the, what do you call that movie? Oh, gosh. Fucking, what's it? It's driving me nuts.
Insidious. It follows.
Insidious. Does she have to go into the other side to do something? I forget how.
The other side.
The Scorpion is ready.
Better film. Better film.
It might be one of the greatest films of all time.
It's an American classic.
It's like Saving Private Ryan, Godfather 2, Predator 2. Yeah.
You got to zip past that one. People went, what?
What'd you say?
The red shoes.
Actually, I think I'm actually alone on Godfather 2. Everyone says it's the best one. I'm like, you could just sleep. I could sleep through that whole movie. It's so boring.
I think I loved it last time I watched it, but I wasn't certain. I thought it was like equal to the first rather than like massively better, if I was being honest.
Yeah. That's another conversation.
That's another discussion.
I'm trying to stay focused here on this movie.
Yeah, but she did go into the other side at one point. kind of an interesting moment where underdeveloped, though. Like, it's a neat moment, neat visual, but she uses the talk to me hand, and I think it's a little boy or a little girl, not sure, it doesn't matter, ends up being on the other hand, the other side of the hand, and she's trying, Mia is trying to use the hand to get to Riley, because Riley is still possessed throughout the remainder of the film. Every time he regains consciousness, he tries to bash his fucking brains in again. Yeah. It's always cool whenever it happens. Wish it happened more, to be honest. That could have been the movie for me. But and the kid, the spirit, says the other end of the incantation or whatever, I let you in, which it basically reverses what we've seen every other time in the movie, where Mia gets sucked into the spirit. Mm-hmm. And then we go into society world. Yeah. or as far as I've heard, the end of that Suspiria remake. It's really goopy. It's really goopy as far as I saw, anyway. I haven't seen the remake of Suspiria. I've had parts of it spoiled.
I watched, same here. Somebody was describing it, I think, on a podcast I was listening to. I'm like, all right, I'll just go back to this end part. And then I'm like, how did we get here? How did we get here? Okay.
That's kind of why I want to see it, though.
Yeah, I kind of want to see it now, too, just because I'm like, okay, I don't know how we got here, but you got here.
Yeah, no, I legitimately want to see it. So we'll get there when we get there. Maybe a review someday.
Also, real quick, before you continue your thought, is Timothée Chalamet and Anya Taylor-Joy just in every single movie right now? They're not
stopping.
It's
their bone structure, Kyle. The world loves their bone structure.
They cannot be stopped. They will be in every movie.
I mean, it kind of feels that way. Anya Taylor-Joy has the 1-2 punch of, I believe she's bilingual. She also speaks Spanish. So, like, for that Mario movie, I have to imagine that they also had her do the Spanish language track for the film as well.
She was in the Mario... She's in movies I didn't even know.
Yeah, I mean, it's a voice-only role, obviously. But yeah, she's Princess Peach in it.
Huh. Okay.
Huh. All right. And meanwhile, Timothée Chalamet is Willy fucking Wonka.
Dude, that one.
What the fuck happened?
I did not. I was blindsided by that. I had no idea. It's just was like, what?
We were doing this? We're making this? Since when?
I was just playing, you know, a bot on chess.com, and then I look up, and then Timothée Chalamet is in an ad. I'm like, for Willy Wonka. I'm like, okay, didn't know that was happening, but you got that. It's the okay. Anyway, sorry.
I've only seen him in a couple of movies. Haven't ever hated him. Actually, was kind of impressed from time to time. Not a selling point for me, obviously, but Dune 2, got that one to look forward to.
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't think Anya Taylor-Joy is in that, which is kind of amazing, actually. I would have expected her to show up in something like that.
I'm kind of hoping more happens in this next Dune movie, just in general. Not that I dislike the first one, but maybe just a little bit more stuff, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you're not wrong. I'm glad that you can concede that you liked it. Like, you did like it. If you really break it down, if you really pull that lens all the way back, it's like, this is mostly a setup movie. Mm-hmm. Like, this is mostly a letting you know what this world's all about movie. But how about we actually do some stuff with that world this time?
Let's let Batista do some stuff, okay? He's menacing.
Let's get a Batista bomb or a choke slam or a clothesline. It's some wrestling movie. I need to see Chalamet get Batista bombed. The animal. I don't know where we were, but I may as well just like accelerate us through like the last act of the movie. So I did mention that Mia sucks her dude's toes, the dude that she would like to be her dude's toes,
the dude's toes she wants to suck on, she sucks on, but doesn't realize she's sucking on his toes.
Precisely. Mm-hmm. But obviously he's repulsed by this because that was not invited. He woke up to that. That's a weird feeling. I can imagine. I haven't experienced it personally.
Oh, you haven't?
Anyway, she continues to abuse the talk to me hand. As Kyle had mentioned, she does attempt to incorporate into a plan to yank Riley out of the other side.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how she came up with that plan, but I guess maybe if this is an allegory for drug abuse, sometimes a drug-addled mind doesn't need to make sense. Yeah. It's like, maybe if I do more, it'll be better. That kind of mentality, I guess. Maybe if I drug harder, I'll be fixed. It'll help this time. It'll be better this time. Anyway, there's a lot of shenanigans where her grip on reality starts to falter, where she starts seeing the spirit of her mother. Not looking great, by the way. Pretty much looking... you would expect her to look like a few hours after her passing. And she keeps whispering in her ear, saying she's urging her to kill Riley and saying that we need to free him. He'll be safe with me. This is where the plot starts to get a little hazy. Long story short, Mia does accidentally kill her own father, or at least stab him in the neck. I don't know if he actually dies, because Jade does find him later and he's still putting pressure on his throat. But basically it manifests like a demonic version of him, of her own father, that attacks her. And I guess this is meant to show us what we saw in the beginning of the movie. Like, these are the delusions that teenager from the beginning of the movie was having when he stabbed his brother and then subsequently himself. So we basically get a replay of that kind of scene, but like with a different perspective. And then the last act of the movie, the last scene basically, is Mia going to the hospital to confront the spirit inhabiting Riley that manifests in the form of like a really nasty looking old feller. And then she somehow hauls Riley up and puts him in a wheelchair and wheels him out of the hospital. She wheels him out of the hospital, Kyle. What the fuck kind of hospitals they got in Australia? Like, did nobody flag this woman down and said, hey, you can't do that?
That's socialized medicine, Trevor. That's what happens.
Wouldn't happen here in America.
This is what the Democrats want. They want your boy to get just carried out by a girl. I don't think Elon Musk should be taxed, personally. I think that he's deserved everything that he's earned, you know?
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, that's how they're voting.
That's next level, Kyle. that's too close to home. not a political podcast, usually, anyway. And the last scene, she, like, rolls this wheelchair. She rolls Riley out to like an underpass or something. Yeah. And it was the angle that they chose to show this car collision was interesting, but also very confusing. Mm-hmm. It was very difficult for me to understand exactly what transpired, because if memory serves, that the way the shots are arranged, her mom whispers, the spirit of her mom like whispers in her ear and tells her, basically says, do it. Do it, loser.
Do it.
She lets go of the wheelchair, and then we cut to the interior of a car speeding down the road. It's just two strangers in this car. And if memory serves, I saw like the old man in the wheelchair on the side of the road, but I didn't see the actual impact. But we do see from the interior of the car, like there's an impact and it spins out, and then the two people are fine, but obviously they hit something. I just don't know what.
I think it's Mia. I think she gets hit.
That seems to be what's implied. It's just that I don't recall seeing her actual body in the frame. But yeah, the aftermath of it, it does seem to be that's what happened.
Yeah, because I think she walks back to the hospital or something, and she's now in the other side. She's on the other side with King Willie.
King Willie's depacketated head.
He's on the other side, I can tell you that much. He's not on this side.
Yeah, this ending sequence was kind of cute. I've seen this done in other movies. I think it's called The Others. Have you heard of this movie from like 1999?
Yeah, no, I watched it.
Not the Nicole Kidman one. Oh, there's a different one that has a similar title. I can't remember exactly, but it's these creatures that hide in the darkness that like relentlessly pursue these young people. And I won't spoil it because it is actually kind of a clever ending to a kind of average movie, but it does have a similar vibe to this one. But yeah, she had mentioned earlier in the movie that she has a reoccurring dream, as she phrases it, where she looks at herself in the mirror and she doesn't see a reflection. So she's pacing around the hospital and there's a mirror on the wall and she's not there. And then the lights start shutting off in sequence. And this is like ultra low budget, effective, dreamlike storytelling in a film where it's like, we didn't do any effects work. We just toggled the lights on. Like we hit the circuit. Yeah. Like that's all. Their circuit breaker. We just toggled some of these switches here and there. But yeah, like she's in an active hospital. She sees Riley and the rest of his family like fine and happy. And then when she doesn't see a reflection, it's like, oh, I'm in limbo or a dream or something. Mm. And she's pretty fucked up, by the way. Like, she's covered in scratches and blood and stuff. And the lights start showing, like, shutting off. She sees her dad in the elevator, and he ignores her and shuts the door without her coming in. And then you hear a match strike, and you see a flame off in the distance, and she walks towards it. And before we see it, we know it's what's coming. Mm-hmm. She's on the other side and someone else is using a talk to me hand to contact the other side, and she ends up reaching out and grabbing the person's hand. It ends up being a Greek fella, I believe. Snap to black credits.
Do you think Heath Ledger's on the other side still in character as the Joker? Because that'd be kind of funny. He's not the Joker, but he's just an actor in character as the Joker and just won't drop it.
Now, see, in the afterlife, I think the same logic would apply, where part of the charm of Heath Ledger's Joker is that he's in about, 17, 20 minutes of that movie? Mm-hmm. Like we're talking, like, Hannibal Lecter-esque numbers. 24/7 Heath Ledger's Joker. If I was stuck in the afterlife with that, I'd be like, I'm gonna rip your head off and shit down your stump. So enough with the clown.
Enough with the clown. I don't know what movie. I don't know why I thought that. Yeah.
Because you didn't like the movie, Kyle, and you're thinking of other things.
I'm thinking of other things.
You're thinking of other movies you'd rather be watching.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. in my opinion, that movie's similar to this, where I like the first half quite a bit, but then the second half just really, the last third of the film, just like, I'm good. I'm all set now. Yeah.
In many ways, it's superior, but it'll never be as good as the original.
It'll never be as good. I meant to get on the soundboard. I was gonna get. Why don't you just go talk to her?
Why don't you go talk to her?
Talk to her.
Why don't you just talk go talk to her? Talk to her. Fuck yeah, lady.
I was hoping this was gonna be like a what is it, Lords of Salem, where it was just like, I didn't really like it, but then after our discussion, I kind of liked it more. I was like, I think I actually enjoyed it. I thought maybe you would be able to save this one for me. Like, maybe I missed something.
I tried, man. I tried really
That's
hard.
That's really why I picked this one. I'm like, maybe Trevor just got something I didn't, or maybe I'm just missing something, but I guess not.
Well, to be honest, and I apologize for this, I actually picked this one for you. I had picked this one in the hopes that we could ease back into the rhythm of recording together and we could do something that you could appreciate, independent of my own personal taste in movies. I actually didn't have a whole lot of hype going into this one, though I did hear it had a good reputation, so I was like, yeah, I'll give that a shot.
It's got a really good rating. I mean, it's got pretty decent ratings.
It does.
Yeah.
It's got two sequels greenlit already.
Fuck off.
It's the most financially successful horror movie A24 has produced, and has already got two sequels in the works.
Jeez.
A sequel and a prequel, I believe.
Oh, of course, yeah.
So this was a resounding success for A24. This was a big fucking deal movie last year.
Yeah, well, I gave him my money at the box office, so I guess I'm part of the problem. Damn it.
Sucker.
Maybe it'll get better, you know? Maybe it'll get better. Who knows?
I mean, feature film debut. That is important to note. Like, I think there's a little maybe too much pressure on filmmakers these days. Of like, there's far too many very, very talented filmmakers who knock it out of the park their first at bat. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that's not everybody's story. In fact, that's traditionally not everybody's story. Usually you do shit for a long time before you even get a budget tossed your way and actually get the backing of a studio or something. But these days it's like your first film has to be the biggest fucking deal in the world if you could ever hope to have a career. And that should not be. That's very, very unfair. But yeah, anyway, this was our discussion of Talk to Me from the year 2022. And it's directed by the brothers Danny and Michael Philippou, also known as Raka Raka. Never going to watch their fucking YouTube channel, ever.
I don't follow
not that it. Not that they're untalented. I just don't care. Yes.
I'm not a YouTube channel guy. I've got workout videos and then comedy stuff. I'm not checking out their YouTube channel. Are you out of your fucking mind?
But that being said, if you'd like to catch up on any of our other Catching Up on Cinema content, you can find all of that collected on our website at catchinguponcinema.com. You can also find us on the social medias in the form of the Twitter/X at Catching Cinema, as well as the Instagram at Catching Up on Cinema. So feel free to hit me up at either of those. And the podcast is available on pretty much every platform you can imagine, including Bitcade. So fucking Google it.
Google it.
And that being said, thank you so much for listening, and we will catch you next time.